Millennials, what we could do is incredible, impact indelible.
There's this tendency to see a generation as transformative in their youth, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're seen as normative. And I think that's what I'm really pushing against. The intention of the work is to illustrate, I think, the broader reality that, you know, we keep being transformative throughout our lives. My prayer there, right, for millennials is in that aspiration, right? God moves in heretical minds. God moves in heretical minds.
Do you ever feel lost?
Say, oh, but you make the path by walking.
Para que sirve la autonomía? Pues, a caminar.
Vente conmigo, amigo, hablar y caminar, porque el camino se hace al andar.
Oye, Jim.
Hola. ¿Cómo estás?
I'm good. Glad to be with you today for Al Andar, our grown-up show and tell for artists podcast, where we talk about our work and the artist's struggle.
The struggle is real.
The struggle is real, man. And today on Al Andar, which comes from the Spanish phrase, se hace el camino al andar, you make the path by walking, we're gonna have fun talking about middle age millennials, the rap song.
Right. Not us.
We may end up having to talk about ourselves.
Okay, cool. I'm ready for that.
But yeah, we'll make it feel safe by involving beats and rhymes.
Dope.
So my song, Middle Age Millennials, is the featured track on the album We Have Been Changed, and it's on Bandcamp. The song is a social history of a generation up to midlife. And for me, it's been about, well, you know, reckoning with aging and then also reflecting on this question, how we doing as a generation so far. I mostly came to that feeling that millennials are pretty dope. I think I have more perspective about the substantial dopeness of millennials, because I'm right on the cusp between Gen X and millennial, but I never felt any sense of, well, like, common cause with Gen Xers. And I do kind of have this sense of millennials sharing maybe a sense of purpose. And that, I think, is what I'm kind of lifting up in this song.
Yeah, very cool. I think, yeah, we'll explore that as we listen to some dope and nasty rhymes.
Amen, hallelujah. So, and for anyone who, you know, doesn't think this is rap, that's fine. Call it not rap. Call it spoken word, whatever you like. But there are rhymes and beats. Now, all right. So first of all, let's talk about the two key concepts in the title. So middle age, when does it start? What is middle aged? What does it mean to be middle aged? Mm-hmm. Is it meaningful as a sort of a marker? And do you identify Are you ready to identify as middle aged?
No.
No. Well, why not?
I think my initial resistance is just that, like, man, I want to live longer, and
yeah.
You know, I think that I have a kind of a youthful spirit. I think we lose a lot of things as we get older that are valuable. The childish sense of joy and curiosity. We tend to get jaded, you know, as we get older. I think you make a reference to that in one of your lines. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's an initial resistance there, but yeah, of course, I'm a middle-aged millennial, and it's all good.
Sounding like you're, yeah,
the complexity of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Word. Okay. What if these aren't like exclusive categories, you know, but just sort of reference points, you know, in a spectrum where there's a lot of blending together, you know. And if our brains are adult at 30, maybe that's sort of youth up to that age, and then middle age maybe starts at 30 even. But then you're still, you know, kind of youthful in other ways at the same time. And you're also aging, and death is also present. You know, I think of my abuelita who passed away recently, and she died, you know, a few weeks short of her 108th birthday. So if we set the abuelita standard, we could put middle age at 54 ish.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so neither Jim or I are middle-aged. We're just interested in the concept. So how about the second one, millennial? Do you now identify with that name of the generation? Did you in the past? When does it start? What is it? Is it significant?
Well, I mean, my understanding is that, you know, these are people who grew up, you know, during, you know, this transitionary period, this the millennial, right? You know, 9/11 was a significant moment, I think, for many millennials. But, you know, I think about other generations, Gen Z, and this newer generation, I guess we're calling it Gen Alpha or whatever. I worry about them. I worry about the kids growing up with TikTok and short videos and you know, after the real rise of the attention economy.
Any identity question, these are things that I've wrestled with and had to come to sort of both and mestizo, mixed identity answers to, you know? My answer to those questions about what's a millennial, let me take it from the intro to this song, which I cut from this album version. Working with youth, my age and a little younger, volunteering for Obama, hope and change, yes, we can, 2008, I thought I'd finally found my generation. Millennials. I'd been told I was born too late for X, and I never did think that hopelessness was fun. Millennials, then defined as people coming of age with the new millennium. Marketers got sick of us as we aged and persisted in protest, because millennials were redefined as those darn 20-somethings. The camera loves youth. But as the media eye zooms by, I see millennials questing, still wrestling with more mature kinds of truth as...
Middle-aged millennials push through spaces liminal, past AIDS in the 80s and poverty made criminal. Millennial old youth changes physical, sensing all things are cyclical. Millennial, something out of nothing, keep it minimal. Get past Trump and immigration made criminal. This too is cyclical.
Both in the introduction and in that first verse, what do you take away from it?
So I'm going to take a stab at it. I do get the sense that there is, this, like a searching for a place to land, from an identity perspective. You know, you mentioned push through spaces liminal. That makes me think about that. I think about change and how that, you know, consistent change is a thing that, is referenced in the song, but it's also something that by definition just is hard to adjust to. And so that's the broader context in which being a middle-aged millennial occurs.
In a campaign for hope and change, we were asked to believe he governed moderate. Tried to hold the center, but there's never been anything false about hope in the American dream. But up come so many still. The center was not whole. Hail the deporter in chief. We learned a lot from Obama about the context in which hope can be harmful. To the believer goes the greater grief.
I get the sense that you're talking about a generation that is hopeful, right? It's defined a lot by its desire for something better, and so the millennium, you know, is kind of fitting here. It's part of the name, but it also represents this sort of better world. And so Obama, for instance, campaigned on hope and change. And so my sense is from the song, represents this for many millennials. It's something that you're driving at. But you also say hope can be harmful, right? So there's disappointment in hope sometimes, in change. And I don't know if maybe that was like a little middle-aged millennial sort of disappointment in Obama, you know? I get the sense that that there are blurry lines distinguishing one generation from another, and so for you the millennial generation is trying to sort of find their footing, and again I think the hope is a big part of that. So let me know how I did and
amen. No, that's
what
beautiful.
I left out.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. And I think that's a good take. That right, the core of the argument, or maybe the good news that this preacher is is seeking to declare is that there is an actuality that of this age cohort of people who have mobilized in hope.
30-something millennials, ready for more, pharmaceuticals, gray hair, counting on Obamacare, disillusioned, indebted, not yet cynical, arms reach away from worst-case scenario, climate change, mass burial, planetary hysterectomy, earth-made sterile, LOL, resistance is hysterical.
Hope within complexity. These two kind of verses in succession, one is mostly a critique of the Obama administration. And then I thought it was really important for that pretty soon after that to speak some appreciation of the Obama administration, right? As people, as millennials age, many of us counting on Obamacare, while we as a generation are much more likely than previous generations to think single payer would be a lot better. I guess I'm trying to connect these different sort of dark and positive moments in a social history within a fabric of hope overall, you know, with a thread of hope going through them. Disillusioned, indebted, not yet cynical.
Not yet cynical.
Not yet
cynical. I think that's great. It's like this tension between youth sort of representing hope and vitality and old age, which often gets contrasted with that, and sort of being in this kind of in-between space.
There's this tendency to see a generation as transformative in their youth, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're seen as normative. And I think that's what I'm really pushing against. The intention of the work is to illustrate, I think, the broader reality that, you know, we keep being transformative throughout our lives. Yeah, and depending on how sort of your social consciousness is deployed and how people are, how you actualize your history, especially in a public way, in a mass way, and even in terms of spirituality, the best transformative impacts of a generation, you know, can be later in life, right? You hopefully have more wisdom, you might have more power, social clout, you know, as you get older. My heart is radical, right? I hear about one tragedy that is clearly like a product of our social conditions, and my impulse is, my moral impulse is, shut it down, right? Let's just stop everything in the world until we and fix this situation of shooting a young person for ringing a doorbell or making a turn in, mm-hmm. you know, in your driveway. For me, it's moral, but it manifests as a political orientation, and it connects with this generational question, because mid-20th century, there was this assumption that I think Churchill put something like this: if you're not a liberal as a young man, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative as an old man, you have no brain, something like that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. And Churchill is a imperialist war criminal responsible for famine in British Imperial India, and not a moral authority. He's not speaking morally there, I at least would say. I see how that can happen, right? I see how becoming more connected to an institution, you know, and to institutions and to like property, you know, can make you have a more conservative orientation. And I think the highest aspiration of this kind of storytelling that the narrator is trying to do here is to envision how you could hack that. You know, I'm not like, I think for now, millennials are mostly staying somewhat progressive politically, not necessarily liberal, but progressive. Many millennials are radical, ready to pull up systems by the root and have fundamental change, like single payer rather than just Obamacare, you know? But I think a big reason for that is a degree of disenfranchisement, a degree of still struggling economically, you know, at where I'd really like to imagine that you could keep this moral liberalism in the sense of being open to new ideas, right, throughout life, and this sort of moral radicalism in the sense of being open to, or just feeling the need for transformational change in the face of systemic human suffering. You know, I recognize that as difficult, actually. But I think the narrator is trying to preach that it's possible to, look at the Rutgers strike, right? The tenured faculty were advocating that, yes, they would get a raise, but that the adjuncts would get a bigger raise, you know, and would get security. That is what they organized around. And one of my friends, Devin English, she's a professor of psychology, focusing on social psychology there. You know, he was a tenured guy, but and he's like in his mid-30s. So depending on where you put midlife, you know, he might be a middle-aged millennial. You know, he wanted a raise, right? But seeing that the success of the strike depended on building a bigger coalition, you know, that's really inspiring. That's a good example of what I'm sort of hope, what I do see in the world that I'm lifting up.
Yeah, that's nice. I do like this striving at tearing down limitations yeah. on who we are, you know, with denotation, right, for millennial,
yeah,
middle-aged, but also for the change that we can make. Yeah, man, it is what did you call it, spreading the good word.
Amen. All right. So, yeah, those ideas are probably more developed in this next sequence.
Maturated millennials. Pushing past their politics out of touch with human needs, and interns expected to be happy to be working for free or work on their knees. Can't quit, gotta pay up those degrees. Survivors rise in rage, wanting this to end, not to be cyclical. Millennials, what we could do is incredible, impact indelible.
We do not see AOC as radical, defaulting to a view that's international. We can't see why people say our Tigo Bernie is nuts. We can see the sense in not me, us. We put no limits on what can be discussed, where socialism is proven and practical.
Because if the USA is exceptional, we shouldn't have to have it exceptionally bad like a Trump tweet. Hashtag sad. We couldn't seem to see another Clinton as historic. We occupied, but power seemed to ignore it. We were beat up and pepper sprayed for it. We done with Black Lives Matter. And me too. Does that sound like an impactful generation to you? New York, New York, I see your tailor two weeds in a perennial need for creeds. Hey, my millennials, how come it seems like no one likes de Blasio? Could we combine respect with our critical dissent of the only New York mayor to ever freeze rent? If history doesn't matter, the empire is off the hook. So before, in our pain, we say they're all crooks. And pronounce a legacy all bad. Please compare them to every other New York mayor we've had. Millennials believe in the elliptical, not against faith, but highly skeptical, devoted to all kinds of yoga.
Fandom, cosplay, Idora, la exploradora.
Hungry for connections, unwilling to bind, but God moves in heretical minds. God moves in heretical minds of maturing millennials. Where have all the flowers gone? Digital, make me a believer.
Filter feeder
on the gram, therefore I am devoted. Discontent promoted.
Millennial, end of the age, new page. Sensing this too is cyclical.
All right, so that's the big arc, I guess I realize now. You know, pretty much the first two verses are kind of, or the first three verses are kind of setting that up, you know? And then this is, yeah, so I think the first part we listen to is kind of the intro, and then this is kind of the core argument. Yeah. So, where'd you go? What'd you recognize? Anything you have that you didn't recognize or you have a question about?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot here, so I'm like still processing it. I can point out two particular things. I do appreciate the complexity is part of the content and form, and I'm getting. You know, I'm getting that. I am curious, maybe towards the end of this section that we listened to, you say, for instance, there's a stanza you say, millennials believe in the elliptical, not against faith, but highly skeptical, devoted to all kinds of yoga, fandoms, cosplay, Dora la Exploradora. Hungry for connections, unwilling to bind, but God moves in heretical minds. God moves in heretical minds. I kind of want to know more about this. I get the sense that maybe this is a superficial reading, but I get the sense that you're talking about a generation that is seeking real meaning, but it doesn't know where to find it. You know,
yeah,
it's kind of Nietzschean in a way, because it's like, you know, we don't have this thing. Let's just say faith for now.
Yeah.
Or at least it seems to be decreasing, let's say.
Yeah.
but there's still this human need for meaning and for connection. So I guess I wanted to know more about that and then what you think.
Yeah, bro. So no, excellent observation. Cause, as you describe it, I realize actually, there's kind of two themes in this section, right? Which I see as linked, right? But what we just listened to, had this long section that was sort of different articulations of a, sort of long view of social political impact of millennials who are reaching middle age, you know? On the other hand, I'm also arguing for, the narrator's arguing for, just that this discourse is important, right? That we need a sense of story, a Sankofic consciousness, right? Reach back to bring forward, reach back to the past to bring forward to the present. And that's summed up in, you know, if history doesn't matter, the empire is off the hook, mm-hmm. right? You know, mm-hmm. And so like, cool, criticize de Blasio, but do you run some facts and compare him to other mayors? You know, we need to compare relative to history, not relative to perfect, you know, I think is what I'm kind of arguing there. And we have so few spaces to be historical, you know? And history in many ways matters the most, like on your block, understanding the history of your block, understanding, you know, of your plot of land that you live on. A powerful commitment to like loving this age cohort of people for me is grounded in spirituality and religious practice. I think you describe really well where a lot of millennials are at in terms of faith, yet valuing, not cynical, right? Seeking meaning and seeking deep meaning and connection, you know? And so sort of my prayer there, right, for millennials is in that aspiration, right? God moves in heretical minds. God moves in heretical minds.
Part of me feels that there is a creator. I wonder how you feel about putting your faith in your lyrics, because on the one hand it's unifying. On the other hand, there are people who, I mean, as you say, there are some middle-aged millennials that don't share it, and so yeah. I'm curious if you feel any kind of, I don't know, hesitation, or maybe that's a reason why you want to put it out there. Because as I was reading it, I was trying to think of like how do I relate to this this line? But God moves in heretical minds. You know, where do I find myself in this statement like this? You know, because I think that's what everyone tries to do when they mm-hmm. when with art. I guess for me, it's like, well, you know, God here can represent this hope for deeper meaning. And, mm-hmm. And you might be heretical in that you don't have a grasp of what is actually meaningful, but there's still God in there somewhere.
Yeah, and I yes, I approached this question of being publicly baptized, practicing evangelical Lutheran liberation Christian, that with great fear and trembling, right? How do you do that publicly? And I approach it at the same time with, like, when I can actualize that, it's joy, such great joy and such freedom and authenticity. The task I'm very much working on is how can I articulate at reality, the reality, my experience of a reality, of an actuality of a God, of the God of the Bible being at work for redemption in the world. The whole creed, a generous creator, a sanctifying presence of spirit that sets us aside from the mundane and gives us an experience of the sublime and the holy, you know. So how can I credibly articulate that, the authenticity of the discourse of the moment, you know, let it, rather than how can I let that voice come out, right, of the discourse, have an exegesis of this truth rather than an esogesis imposing, right, the idea onto the discourse as doctrine.
I think it's great that you, in a sense, you're making God accessible to maybe people who don't believe in God. Like there's still a God there to be found, in a manner of speaking. So I think that can be appreciated.
Amen. Word. Yeah. And I'm participating in the Reformation for me, in the Reformation's, project of, what Luther phrased as, your God is where you put your ultimate trust. And so his take was that it's not really a question of whether you're going to believe or not. It's what you're going to put your ultimate trust in. This whole faith section is also a critique, right, of idolatry, of false gods, and then implicitly it's supporting that view that it's not really, I'm sorry, secular isn't an option. I think not for humans, right? If we exclude humans from all culture and politics and decision-making, we could claim that we didn't have a faith-based society. But I don't think that's a reality. As Christopher Hitchens said, North Korea is, extremely religious space, even though they're claimed, you know, they're very faith-based in a sense, even though they claim to be secular, that as an extreme example. And yeah, so for this whole section, I'm playfully teasing, I am playfully teasing millennials also there, right? So like millennials believe in the elliptical. For me, it's double meaning that I think is kind of beautiful, elliptical. I'm not sure this is the right meaning of the word exactly, but I sort of hear it as sort of the indirect path, you know, and that's kind of poetic. Or sometimes I find, obviously, that we hear the way I'm talking, I'm always up in the elliptical. And on the other hand, I have a bunch of friends who, like, maybe the thing they have the clearest faith in is the elliptical machine at the gym. Like, wow, that's a really wow, that's great. And
good pun. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree to some extent. I like the elliptical. And yeah, so not against faith, highly skeptical. devoted to all kinds of yoga. And it, actually, that's, you know, not inappropriate, right? Like, yoga is, does come out of Hindu traditions, right? And, but even like in the gym, I think people, in a sense, are putting their faith, putting their ultimate trust into a gym practice. Definitely, I experience that in fan culture, right? You know, and oh, Dora is just cute. I like Dora. Yeah, and so I think Dora. I think I've the rhyme like with Dora and yoga, the off rhyme that you can make work depending on how you say it. Let's me go to a character where that kind of seems to actualize this combination of, I don't know, she's so sweet, right? She's kind of Christ-like, right? She's so vulnerable, and in a sense believing in kindness, you know, but then, and she's a science character, you know, she's exploring, right? Mm-hmm. She's discovering. Yeah. And then in that next section, I'm kind of teasing about social media in a similar way. Instagram can be a powerful religion, you know, in a sense.
I like that you quoted Christopher Hitchens. I wasn't expecting that.
I've got a song that's a prayer for Christopher Hitchens. We might get to that someday.
All right, let's do the last section?
40-something, yeah. And so this is my own kind of fandom, both and observation, right? I'm working in my own church and prayerful that historic religions can reach young people, working on that project. And at the same time, I think I recognize how faith is at work, and God, as I experience God, is at work in other kinds of trust and love relationships. And yeah, so in this last section, I'm specifically making the argument that there are 40-something millennials, right? So if I think about the boundary, I think there's kind of a meaningful boundary from 1980 to probably the year 2000, if you're born before 9/11, you know, and I think it kind of culminates around the first Obama campaign. You know, if you have some memories of the first Obama campaign, and it seemed like credible signs of hope to you, you know, and you were coming of age or being formed still, you know, yeah, you're kind of a millennial, you know, that's basically my view, of what a millennial is, and just dump a bunch of, sort of cultural, pop cultural associations. And somehow that got really emotional for me as I was actually performing this, you know, recording it. And, I think I sort of felt myself under the weight of the way that the narrator's articulating a hopeful argument in the midst of an awareness of a lot of despair, mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's not lost on the listener, and to quote J. Cole, it's beauty in the struggle. It's what makes it beautiful. So
yeah, baby. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Let's dive into it, because otherwise I'm going to talk about Star Trek.
End of the Age, new page. 40-something millennials,
Got to see the Millennium twice. Millennium Falcon, Disney brings it nice, but heroes from fake history awaiting the true millennium. Can't feed the need for authenticity, having outlived Biggie and Pac and Kurt and Prince and Hasselbein, Black and Turk and Bowie and MJ. Left Eye and Whitney. Can't believe how we lost MJ. The hyenas got my hero, and I'm never gonna be okay. Awaiting the true moment. Huxtables, untouchable, but I'm still hopeful. You know, I'm still pretty hopeful. Through mass incarceration stain, we remain the true millennium. Awaiting the true millennium. Maybe we'll bring the millennium. Maybe we'll be the millennium. And like my ideal, Tony Kushner testified.
When the millennium comes.
Not like the year 3000, but the capital M millennium.
Right. When the millennium comes, the fountain of Bethesda will flow again. And anyone who is suffering in body or in the spirit may walk through the waters and be healed. Wash clean of pain.
I heard struggle. I've heard this need for authenticity. Almost like an erasure or a deletion of more meaningful meaning, and emotion, a lot of strong emotion. I like the way that there's some emotion at the end that I think is audible and I think works well to reinforce the pathos here. I wanted to ask you about the millennium because it's features prominently here. You're certainly better than I am to ask about this. So can you just define it and why it's so meaningful in the context of this work?
Millennium has this other meaning. And for me, the fact that this other meaning that is spiritual, that is all about transformation, you know, that specifically relates to thinking, ways of hearing the Book of Revelations, the revelations according to Saint John of Patmos, which is visionary, you know, visionary horror poetry. Think of how violence in rap is kind of akin, in some violence in rap is kind of akin to, well, Ice Cube would say that he was writing reality rap, right? Kind of like John of Patmos in maybe kind of like Cube in a sense, you know, more like John of Patmos. I was trying to like look at the reality and get to a message of hope. Now, and he does it in this really visionary imagery. So it also relates, I think, to the Book of Daniel and the Hebrew scriptures. But in general, it's this using 1,000, not really as a number, but as a numerology, as a spiritual numerology. amplifying the meaning of the word, right? And the meaning is about, for Christians, it's about Jesus Christ has died, Jesus Christ has risen, Jesus Christ will come again. And that this millennium, this restoration happens with Jesus' return. So that's, and I'm specifically quoting Tony Kushner's play, Angels in America, which was maybe the most influential play of theater in from U.S. theater in the 1990s, you know, as my cultural awareness was forming. And it's an epic play. It runs more than 7 hours. So it's normally performed in two sections on two different nights or even two different like productions, you know? Second part's called Millennium Approaches. Angels in America, Millennium Approaches is the second part of the play. And it brings together these characters who seem to be natural enemies, but one way of describing New York is that New York is everybody and their natural enemy. the diversity of New York, right? And so this is using natural enemy in a metaphorical way, actually talking about social conflicts, right? And in the last scene of the play, this implausible group has kind of been brought together, and it's this not everybody's reconciled, but it includes this trans or gender fluid character, these two former lovers, gay lovers, and the mother, the Mormon mother of a guy that was involved with one of these former lovers. So anyhow, one of them cheated on with the other or left one for the other, right? Okay, so they're at Bethesda Terrace in Central Park, and the Mormon mom explains the significance of the angel Bethesda using that language. So it's a sublime illustration example of what I am trying to do in my work, which is like speak in the real context and get to a place where a transcendent word can come out, you know? So when I always loved that line, and I think I memorized it since maybe 1996, 97. When the millennium comes, the fountain Bethesda will flow again, and anyone who is suffering in body or in the spirit may walk through the waters and be healed, washed clean of pain.
It's a beautiful line, and it ties everything together conceptually and emotionally in the song. And so my sense of the song now, with the context of this quote and explanations, is that there's this yearning to transcend. There's a necessitation to transcend, because there is this because you can't reach it the millennium or the transcendence, you can't reach it based on the, I don't know if it's the current conditions, current thinking, the current paradigm, whatever it is. It's you have to break free from that, but it's also a story of, it's almost like you're living in pain, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like that middle-aged millennial metaphor again, with it's a transitional stage where there's like, there's still hope, you know, there's still and I think that that's also, to bring it back to the I guess small m millennium, the new millennium, that, you know, and you mentioned Obama as well, it's like there was kind of a hope,
the 21st century.
I mean, I was kind of young, but there was this, it was kind of a big deal, because it's like, okay, the numbers change. there's a two there. and it's sort of, it's ushering in this as yet inchoate, you know, nascent future where anything is possible. And so, yeah, it's like you're saying, like, anything is possible if you just remember that.
But maybe the most radical aspiration is this, maybe we'll be the millennium. You know, and I would suggest that it's constructive just to dream that dream, right? That, oh yeah, we'll reverse climate change and racism. We've still got time. So once again, if you want to be the millennium or know someone who would, please go to my Bandcamp page. I'm Marcos de la Guagua. You can go to delaguagua.com. You can go to marcosdlg.com, and you'll find a link to it. Or just search for me on Bandcamp. We've been talking about middle-aged millennials from my album, We Have Been Changed. And this, the mix of hope and struggle that we've been reflecting on here reminds me of another line from Tony Kushner's play, Angels in America, that I memorized over 20 years ago and has just stayed with me. The character Harper says, in this world, there is a kind of painful progress, longing for what's left behind and dreaming ahead.
Wepa.
All right. Now a word from Dora la Exploradora. Can you say wepa?